This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
WPHT, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The revolution will be broadcast.
Yes.
This is the next generation of talk. Now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, Rich Zeoli.
All right, breaking news, a federal judge just overturned Florida's law against kids mutilating their bodies and taking experimental drugs. That's right, it just happened a short time ago. A Bill Clinton-appointed judge saying gender identity is real. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here today. It is Tuesday, June 6th, the 79th anniversary of D-Day. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. A little bit later in the show, I do have some D-Day tributes planned. I always do that every year on June 6th because I think it's very important. It's one of the most important days in history, I think, and really should be celebrated for a whole month, but instead we get another month. Anyway, I'll get into details on all of this stuff throughout the show today. We've got some great guests coming up as well. But first, I want to tell you, right before I got on the air today, this news broke about what this federal judge just ruled, and it's pathetic. It really is. It's pathetic what this judge is saying here. So basically, this Clinton-appointed judge says gender identity is real. Now, what the hell does that mean, gender identity? Basically, what it means is that you can have an identity that's different from your biological sex, and that therefore Florida's law banning minors from having transitions is unconstitutional. So he just put it on hold. Now, this is not the end of the fight, obviously, but it's a great reminder of why the federal courts are so important, because this is where they try to rewrite laws on the federal bench all the time. So a federal judge earlier today sided with families who sued over Florida's ban on gender transition procedures for minors, declaring that, quote, gender identity is real. This is from the Daily Caller, just published a short time ago. A group of families backed by several LGBTQ+IA, every letter of the alphabet group, sued Florida in March shortly after the rule restricting minors from accessing surgical sex change procedures, puberty blockers, and hormone therapy took effect. Northern District of Florida Judge Robert L. Hinkle, a Clinton appointee, granted a preliminary injunction against the law to prohibit it from being enforced against the plaintiffs, and proceeded to make the claim that, quote, great weight of medical authority supports these treatments, the judge said. The great weight of medical authority. In much of the developed world, including obviously many Scandinavian countries, sex change interventions for minors are seen as lacking evidence and as largely experimental treatments. Additionally, pioneers in gender dysphoria treatment have come out against modern philosophies that emphasize immediately affirming gender procedures for kids. So the fact that this judge came out and ruled this, a couple thoughts on here, obviously. The judge is basically saying now that kids know if they're a different identity than their biological sex. And this is what the judge wrote. With extraordinarily rare exceptions not at issue here, every person is born with external sex characteristics, male or female, and chromosomes that match, the judge said. As the person goes through life, the person also has a gender identity, a deeply felt internal sense of being male or female. Let's just go through that again, shall we? with extraordinarily rare exceptions, not an issue here, meaning that if somebody was born with extra parts or born with, you know, both chromosomes or something like that, but that's not what the judge is talking about. So this literally has to do with people who are born with sex characteristics and chromosomes that match, boy and girl. As the person goes through life, the judge says, the person also has a gender identity, a deeply felt internal sense of being male or female. That gender identity can conflict with what the biological sex is. In other words, what the person is born with, external sex characteristics, male or female, and chromosomes that match. The judge slammed Florida's claim that organizations that advocate for gender transition procedures as dominated by individuals who pursued good politics, not good medicine. All right? If ever a pot called the kettle black, it is here. The statute and the rules were an exercise in politics, not good medicine, the judge said. There has long been and still is substantial bigotry directed at transgender individuals. It is hardly surprising that doctors who understand that transgender identity can be real, not made up, doctors who are willing to provide supportive medical care, oppose anti-transgender bigotry. So the judge, in his mind, a state law that protects children, minors, from mutilating their bodies or taking experimental drugs, that's anti-transgender bigotry. As you can imagine, obviously, this judge is a lefty quack, clearly. But it is interesting how the judge says a person has gender identity, a deeply felt internal sense of being male or female, a deeply felt internal sense. And so that now should guide policy, this deeply felt internal sense. Got it? Now, when I was a kid, I had a deeply felt internal sense of craving alcohol all the time. I wanted to go drink in the woods with my friends, but I couldn't. The law wouldn't allow me to do so because it would have hurt my body. To drink as a kid is not good. So even though I had a deeply felt internal sense of being a 21-year-old, I wasn't yet, and so I couldn't engage in drinking beers. Now, that's why people engage in things like getting fake IDs and that sort of thing, because they try to skirt the law. When I was a kid also, I had a deeply felt internal sense of being an adult. I thought I knew everything by the time I was 13, and I really thought I was smarter than most adults. And I was convinced I should have all the rights afforded before me. So I had an adult identity, a deeply felt, like you could write it as that, you know, you have a certain biological age, but as you go through life, you also have an age identity, a deeply felt internal sense of being older or younger than you are. Why not? Why does it just have to do with gender? Seriously, why just gender? Why can't you say, as the person goes through life, the person also has an age identity, a deeply felt internal sense of being older or younger. I know lots of people who feel very young for their age. And you always hear things like, well, 60 is the new 40 and 40 is the new 20 and, you know, on and on it goes. All those people live longer. 100 is the new 75. You hear all these things. And every kid wants to grow up as fast as possible. Every teenager wants to be an adult. Every teenager wants to be able to drive and drink and smoke and do all the other things. That's what they want to do. They want to get old as quickly as possible. They don't think that they should have any restrictions, any hindrances on them whatsoever. So if you're a teenager and you have a deeply felt internal sense of being an adult, why shouldn't you be able to be an adult under the law? I mean, why shouldn't you be able to? Now, there's certainly cases where you can get emancipated from your parents and things like that, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about all the rights of adulthood transferred upon you at whatever age you decide you are an adult. Why not? Why is it just gender? Why do we just play these games with gender is what I don't understand here. It's because, well, I mean, I know why. It's because they have this massive group with lots of, with an alphabet soup full of letters behind them and an entire month dedicated to them that pushes this stuff. And it's political and it's not based on science. The doctors who are coming out and saying that to oppose this is anti-trans bigotry, these doctors stand to make a lot of cash. And I always tell you in life, follow the money, right? Follow the fazools. Because it always leads you to the truth. These doctors who are coming out and saying this stand to make a lot of money performing these very procedures. the pharmaceutical companies that make these drugs stand to make a lot of money. So that's why they're coming out and saying that if you oppose this, it's anti-trans bigotry. Now, let's think about the role of the state in all this as well. Does the state not have a right to try to protect its children, even when the parents want the kids to do something that is clearly dangerous and not in their best interest? Let me give you an example. I'm all for parental rights, and I think that far too often the state tries to intervene in that. I talk about it all the time. But we're talking about causing serious bodily harm here. Parents cannot molest their children. Parents cannot physically beat their children within an inch of their life. Right? There's certain laws that the state, we all agree as a society, the state has a right to jump in and say, no, even though they're your kids, you can't do those things to them. It is not in their best interest. And so, no, you can't do it. You know, if a parent thinks that their 8-year-old son is old enough to start doing shots of bourbon with them, we come in and say, not good. You know, you're a terrible parent. That's not a good idea. So the state has a compelling interest to protect its children from bodily harm. Now, what we're talking about here is we're talking about something that has very life-altering consequences. We're talking about, in the case of young women, double mastectomies, chopping off their boobs. In the case of little boys, possibly now chopping off their penis. And what we're talking about here with these children is also taking drugs that can have serious effects on them. We don't let children do drugs. We don't let them do certain drugs. We as a society, say we don't think that kids should be able to do this. Even if drugs were legal, they probably still wouldn't be legal for kids under 18 or 21. Marijuana is a great example of this, right? In states that have legalized recreational cannabis, they've done it for 18 plus or 21 plus, depending on the state, but typically it's basically 21. That's been the law in most states. Why? Because, again, the theory goes that this could harm your body and you may not be old enough to know the effects, and so we want to make you wait. It's the same thing with booze. But in this case now, if the state of Florida says we have a right to protect our children from parents who want to hurt them physically or mentally, the court says you can't. Now, I know that parental rights are not an issue here. So I'm actually going down a road the judge himself did not even go down. If the judge had come out and given a lengthy rhetorical treatise on parental rights or something like that, that'd be one thing. That's not what the judge did. What the judge is doing here, a federal judge, is basically writing into jurisprudence that gender identity is real. And you know the left loves this, right? They love this. It's just like when Roe decided on this idea of the three trimesters, and then Roe wrote law from the bench and said which trimester it's okay to kill a baby and that sort of thing. Remember that whole thing with Roe v. Wade? Or the penumbra of privacy. The court wrote that, which there's no such thing in the Constitution about a penumbra of privacy. They love when the court does this stuff. So what their ultimate goal is to have a Supreme Court, not this one because it never would, but a future Supreme Court, or at least a circuit court, and then the ruling not be challenged, a circuit court to officially rule that gender identity is real and protected by the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, because you know as well as I do, that's where they'll go with this. They'll cite the 14th Amendment, even though nobody, and I mean this, not one person at the time of the passage of the 14th Amendment would have thought it ever meant gender identity. Not one. But they also didn't think it meant gay marriage either. They also didn't think it meant that if you are an illegal alien and you had a child here, that that child would be conferred birthright citizenship. I know that because at the time of the passage of the 14th Amendment, when ambassadors and diplomats were here in the United States and had children, their kids were not considered citizens. But it doesn't matter, because today in this day and age, the 14th Amendment now is the catch-all for everything. Speaking of this, by the way, I should also mention to you that these former track stars are in court today. They are talking about the right of women to compete in women's sports and not have biological dudes beat them or take their spot. This is happening right now in New York City, and the Alliance Defending Freedom is representing the young girls in court. So that's happening right now in New York City as this plays out. But this is what this is the point of what this judge is doing. And listen very carefully here, because I can't stress this enough. This is a federal judge who's decided now that gender identity, which is a deeply felt internal sense of being different than your biological sex, is real, is protected by the United States Constitution, and even if you are a minor, the state has no right to intervene and stop you from going down the road and performing these procedures. And this is the ultimate ball game. This is the ultimate goal. They want this to be affirmed in the courts. A judge writing that gender identity is real in federal law. Judge writing this from a federal bench. I can't emphasize this enough. This is not a minor point. This is not a minor point. This is what these radical lefty federal judges try to do. They try to legislate from the bench. That's what this federal judge is doing. He wants this to become precedent, and he wants another court to cite his opinion, and this is the awakening of gender identity being real and protected by the Constitution. Gender identity being a deeply felt internal sense of being male or female. It's not an accident that the judge used this language on purpose. And it's not an accident then that the judge went down the road of saying that to be against these procedures is anti-trans bigotry, and to use the word bigotry is also not an accident. The judge is using that to also try now to afford protections under the 14th Amendment of the United States to transgender minors under the guise of bigotry. That if you oppose this, these procedures for them, that you are engaging in bigotry, and bigotry, of course, is against the law, unconstitutional, et cetera, et cetera. And this is what the judge is doing. I cannot emphasize enough to you how dangerous this writing is. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli if you want to weigh in today. Now, I get people ask me all the time, Rich, are you an attorney? I am not an attorney. I did not go to law school. I've just always loved constitutional law. Ever since I was a kid, I used to listen to my May It Please the Court, which are landmark Supreme Court cases. I listened to the oral arguments of them. I know, chicks dig it, but still, in high school, I loved it. I loved doing it. And when I got to college, I would love arguing Supreme Court cases. But I never went to law school. I just wasn't my thing. I didn't need more school. But I know who did go to law school, and he's the guy that I would call if I was ever hurt in an accident. And I'm talking about my buddy, Tom Skopinich, the law offices of Thomas G. Skopinich. He's the man when it comes to fighting for you to get what you deserve if you've been hurt in an accident. See, a lot of times people make the mistake of counting on the insurance companies, but insurance companies are big businesses and they don't have your bottom line at stake here. It's their own bottom line because they're big businesses. And Tom Skopinich used to work for and on behalf of the big insurance companies. So he knows their tactics. He knows their strategies. And he wants to be able to put that to work for you. So let him. He has helped so many people in his 25-year career on both sides of the river in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. So reach out to him today, 215-624-2211, or go to scopelawyer.com, S-C-O-P-E, lawyer.com. The law offices of Thomas G. Skopinich. My buddy Tom Scope, he will fight for you. He will get what you deserve. He will make sure that you get the fair value of your case. Do not go it alone. You need a guy on your side. You need Tom Skopinich, Scope Lawyer.
The Zeoli Show on your schedule from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in the free Odyssey app.
.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right, it is Tuesday, June 6th. 79 years ago today, of course, the invasion of Normandy, the liberation of France would begin, and the end of Hitler's tyranny would begin as well. So we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show today. I have some ideas and some things I want to talk about, including some of the brave Medal of Honor winners from that day. I wanted to share some of their stories with you. But lots to talk about. It's a busy day. By the way, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie just announced that he is, well, he isn't formally announced. He filed paperwork to run for president. So he joins the race now after Mike Pence announced yesterday or filed paperwork yesterday to also join the race for president. A formal campaign style announcement, I presume, is forthcoming. I don't know when exactly, but we'll see. We'll see when that happens. I haven't heard any actual dates on that yet. All right. So here's the thing. John Kirby, the Pentagon spokesperson, just made a couple comments regarding reports the United Nations had intelligence detailing a Ukrainian plot to attack the Nord Stream pipeline. Now, again, when it comes to Nord Stream, I read Seymour Hersh's piece, and I'm convinced that the United States of America blew up Nord Stream. I'm convinced of it. I have no doubts about that, actually. And I think that, once again, we're being lied to, and it's a snow job. And the Ukrainians didn't have the ability to do this on their own, let's face it. They needed help. They needed our help. So maybe we did it with them, but they certainly didn't do it on their own. And they wouldn't have been able to do it on their own, not without us at least knowing about it. So now I think, if anything, it is now the obfuscation to try to say, well, listen, if it happened, it was them, you know? So here's Kirby on this. Let's start with cut number one.
And one more, the Discord leaks. There's a report in the Washington Post that the U.S. Had reports that Ukrainians were planning an attack on the Nord Stream pipeline. Do you have any comment on the intelligence report of that? And there are also suggestions that Russia may have been responsible for that. You know, why was Russia initially figured point at Russia when the U.S. might have had information that Ukrainians were planning this?
So I'm certainly not going to engage in a discussion about intelligence matters here from the podium, specifically with regard to that disclosure or any of the other. And in this case, certainly not going to speak to one that the Washington Post even said was not corroborated by U.S. intelligence agencies. Now, I think you know there are three countries conducting an investigation of the Nord Stream sabotage, and we called it sabotage at the moment: Germany, Sweden, and Denmark. Those investigations are ongoing. And again, the last thing that we're going to want to do from this podium is get ahead of those investigations.
And one more in the Discord league.
All right, so they don't want to get ahead of these investigations, all right? But is the United States of America doing an investigation? Because that's the question that I have. Cut two.
Is the U.S. actively investigating No. who did it? Why not?
There are three European countries that have embarked on independent investigations of this, and we're comfortable in their ability to take a hard look at this and to come up with conclusions.
Is the U.S.
All right, so there you go. The United States of America is not investigating. The United States of America is not investigating. Other countries are investigating, but not the United States of America. Got it? All right. Well, you know why we're not investigating, right? Because we did it. And so we don't want to actually be called out on that. Well, there's also a whistleblower who's come forward to say that aliens are real. I'll get into that with you as the show unfolds as well. Don't worry about that. But much to get to this afternoon. Here is now... The question, of course, is when we think about what's happening right now with the Biden investigation, and we think about the FBI director, Christopher Wray, and we think about what's happening with Chairman Jim Comer, who is the guy leading this effort to get to the bottom and figure out everything that's happening with the Biden investigation. And you and I both know there's a lot there. You and I both know that the Bidens are guilty of something. But it's being slow walked by the FBI. It's being slow walked by the DOJ. And James Comer fired back at a reporter who defended the FBI. And then a new report seemingly confirms his suspicion. So here's what happened. House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer suggested that he does not trust the FBI. He met with FBI Director Christopher Wray. He viewed this FBI document that allegedly contains evidence of a criminal bribery scheme in which Joe Biden participated in as vice president. And Comer fielded some questions from the media. One reporter asked Comer why he plans to move forward with contempt of Congress proceedings, despite Christopher Wray meeting with him and showing him the document. The reporter asked the question as follows. Why do you need the document in hand? You just got a chance to review it. Why move forward with contempt when the FBI says they're cooperating in good faith? So Comer said the dominant media narrative, which aligns with the White House's narrative, of course, is reason enough to question whether the FBI is taking seriously the allegations in the document. He said, quote, let's just look at what I've read in a lot of the media accounts and with statements that the White House has made from the podium, that there's no merit to this, that this is crazy. This is a conspiracy theory. And you're just supposed to take our word or the FBI's word. I'm supposed to take the FBI's word that they're investigating this. Remember, the main reason they're not wanting to make it public is because they're concerned about the source, he said. So when you think about everything that we talk about on the show, it's always about the weaponization of government, the weaponization of government. And the fact of the weaponization of government, the fact that the weaponization of government is a problem for not just the enemies of the government, but also the people that it likes. So if the government likes you, the government will protect you. If the government doesn't like you, then the government's going to go after you. That's what weaponization of government is all about. That's exactly what I mean by that. The FBI and the Department of Justice purposely now slow walking all of this is done as also weaponization. It's not just the government going after its enemies. It's also the government protecting its friends. And in this case, the friends, of course, are the Bidens. And do you think the media is at all interested in any of this? Do you think the media is at all interested in anything regarding the story of what James Comer's talking about? Of course not. Absolute media silence, exactly like I told you. The networks ignored the FBI refusing to hand over Biden bribery documents to Chairman Comer. So on Monday, the FBI director, of course, who tried to have it both ways, and Comer announced officially on Monday that he will seek to hold the FBI director in contempt of Congress. None of that, none of the allegations, nothing about the FBI director stonewalling them, nothing about the FBI director potentially being in contempt of Congress, none of it made it to the three evening news broadcasts. Instead, ABC's World News Tonight, CBS Evening News and ABC Nightly News decided to report on their preferred political scandal involving former President Trump's lawyers meeting with special counsel Jack Smith. They had no interest in covering Comer's allegations, no interest whatsoever in discussing how the FBI director may be stonewalling Congress and how the FBI director may be held in contempt. No desire, no interest, not even like a smidgen of interest, not even a smidgen of curiosity. The media, no interest in doing actual journalism. Why would they? I mean, why would they? This makes them all look bad. Here is Speaker McCarthy talking about this, saying that the FBI director will be held in contempt. He will be held in contempt. He was on with Jesse Waters last night, cut three.
Chris Wray at the FBI, is he going to be held in contempt?
He will be held in contempt if he doesn't do what is responsible to do. Remember, in the Commitment to America, Republicans said we'd go and make sure we had accountability and transparency. We had a whistleblower come before us and say that he'd gone to the FBI about hearing of a $5 million bribe from a foreign individual to then Vice President Biden, and then talked about sending money to LLCs and others. We subpoenaed that because, remember, Congress has the constitutional right of the oversight of the FBI. This document is not even classified. What is the first thing that Director Wray said? He didn't even acknowledge whether he had it. He said he wouldn't provide it. I had a phone call with him, explained to him, if he does not provide this, we will hold him in contempt. Now he said, yes, we do have the document, but he'll only show it to the chairman and ranking member. That is not how the Constitution works. Everybody on the Committee of Oversight, Republican and Democrats, have a right to see this unclassified document. If he doesn't come forth and allow everyone to see it, we will move contempt charges against him on Thursday. Secretary Blinken had the same problem when he would not give the documents about what happened in Afghanistan. He now realizes, yes, he should supply it to everybody on the committee. Congress has the constitutional right to oversee and to hold this government accountable.
Exactly.
We are loaned
the voice. So that it really does have the obligation to do so, and let's hope that they do. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. Listen, you know, my happy place this summer is a place that I definitely invite you to come visit and join us for an incredible time. But if you want to make lifelong memories with your family, your friends, and your loved ones, now is the time to book a getaway at the beautiful oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. You and your family deserve a vacation. Your next call should be to the beautiful oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, because rooms are going fast for the summer season. Of course, it's a great place to be. Why wouldn't you want to be there? That's why you want to make your reservation today. They have beautiful accommodations, rooms, suites, and townhouses. Enjoy all the amenities of Cape May's premier resort, like the indoor-outdoor pool. Grab some lunch, a frozen cocktail, maybe some rum buckets at the outdoor pool bar. Of course, some local beers. Love the ocean? You're steps from the ocean. And they offer beach service with chairs and umbrellas, cabanas, food delivered right to your beach chair. And you will receive two beach chairs per room, and beach food service is available as well. Dine in Hemingway's restaurant, which is open 7 days a week for dine-in or takeout for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They have a DJ Friday and Saturday nights as well. And don't forget, the Grand is the perfect place to host an event. When it comes to weddings, the Grand Hotel was just awarded number 10 out of 15 best beach wedding venue in the United States. Number one in all of New Jersey, according to brides.com. So give my friend Caitlin a call today to book a tour of the Grand to have your dream wedding. And when it comes to those June and July and August vacation plans, there's no better place than the beautiful oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. You'll love the giant outdoor pool. You'll love the indoor pool. And both pools are heated. 800-257-8550, 800-257-8550, or GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
Thanks for listening to the Zeoli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
All right, it was 79 years ago today, by the way, the invasion of Normandy, D-Day. And as of right now, there's still not been a word from the president of the United States of America. He was just asked a few minutes ago as the press corps was at the White House, at the cabinet meeting. Mr. President, will there be a statement on D-Day coming? Will you have anything to say on D-Day or something? And he said, it's coming. It's coming. So it's 3:45-ish. And we have not heard anything from the president of the United States on the 79th anniversary of D-Day. Pretty pathetic, if you ask me. Let's turn our attention, shall we, to a critical part of the ever essential Christopher Not Christopher Wray. Excuse me. Jeez. Oh, my gosh. I'm thinking about Christopher Wray. That's the guy that's got to go. No, John Durham. John Durham's report, which was very, very important in a lot of respects. But, of course, John Durham's report left out a couple of key facts. And here to talk about it with us on the show, welcome back to the show, Aaron Matte is a journalist at Real Clear Investigations. Aaron, thanks for joining me here in Philadelphia.
Good to be here.
Your latest piece about this at Real Clear Investigations is the thing that John Durham left out of the report. A lot of people are talking about what's in it, obviously, but there's a pretty glaring omission, huh?
There is. So Durham confirmed what was already obvious, which is that the Trump-Russia probe collusion was baseless. The FBI did not have a sufficient predicate to launch that probe. And Durham also noted how the FBI extensively relied on the Steele dossier, which is funded by the Clinton campaign. Most people know about that. What most people don't know, and what Durham ignored, is that for the other foundational allegation of Russiagate, which is that Russia stole Democratic Party emails and gave them to WikiLeaks, for that allegation, the FBI also relied on a Clinton-funded source, much like it relied on the Clinton-funded Steele dossier to chase collusion. And that source is CrowdStrike. That's a firm that the Clinton campaign hired, and they're the ones who first made the claim that Russia had hacked the DNC. And what I go through in my article is that the FBI relied on CrowdStrike rather than do its own forensics of the DNC server. And I also point out that in the process, two key figures in this, I think, lied before Congress, because Michael Sussman, who is an attorney for Clinton, and Sean Henry, who is the president of CrowdStrike, both of them told Congress that the FBI never asked for access to the DNC servers to inspect it for themselves. Durham, in his investigation, released emails that show that those claims by Sussman and Henry are false, because those emails show that the FBI asked Sussman to come and inspect the servers, and Sussman then relayed that request to CrowdStrike, and CrowdStrike denied it. So that's an instance there of false testimony before Congress by Sussman and Henry, and Durham completely ignores this entire story.
Why do you think?
Well, I don't know. I'd love to see him ask that question, but I also know that he did not ask key figures or compel key people like Jim Comey, like Peter Strzok, like Andrew McCabe to come and testify before his panel. If they refused to testify, he didn't subpoena them when he could have, unlike what Mueller did during his probe. So I think John Durham was not sufficiently committed to finding out the truth. And I think in this case, when you have an allegation such as Russia hacking the DNC, this was such a foundational allegation. It was so consequential. It's at the heart of this entire scandal. And maybe, just like Durham didn't want to go through the trouble of subpoenaing the former director of the FBI, Jim Comey, maybe he just didn't want to go there.
Yeah, but he should have gone there. I mean, this is the problem that a lot of people have with his report, is that they felt as if the entire issue of Hillary Clinton and her campaign being really the campaign that colluded with Russia, that so much of that was lacking, and that the report lacked a lot of substance and also didn't lead to any criminal charges for anybody. What you're describing here, Aaron, is the potential here for at least contempt of Congress charges.
Absolutely. And you compare that to what Mueller did. Mueller charged four Trump associates with false statements, including two people, Michael Cohen and Roger Stone, for making false statements to Congress. Now, all those false statements were completely immaterial because the Mueller team knew from the start that there was no Trump-Russia conspiracy. So nobody was covering up an underlying crime because there was none. By contrast, here you have two key Clinton people telling Congress that the FBI did not request access to the DNC servers, which, again, is the core allegation at the heart of Russiagate. Before collusion comes the allegation that Russia stole these emails and gave them to WikiLeaks. That came first. That came even before collusion. And yet, these two key Clinton associates, her attorney, Michael Sussman, and her contractor, Sean Henry of CrowdStrike, were not charged with anything. And so I think if there's any attempt left to try to get to the truth, they should be questioned about this, because these were hugely material false statements to Congress.
Yeah, they really were. And even, of course, if they were referred to the Department of Justice for criminal prosecution, the Department of Justice probably wouldn't do anything. But at least the Republicans in Congress could make an effort here to hold people accountable. That's the big point, right? I mean, this entire issue seems like the report came out and then it went away and that was the end of it. And I think a lot of people have been left very frustrated in the wake of this.
I mean, look, just compare how much attention this took up when it was happening. Every day we were told on CNN and MSNBC that Mueller was going to uncover a big conspiracy with Russia. And this consumed the country for years. And it had a serious impact on U.S.-Russia relations. It basically made diplomacy between U.S. and Russia impossible. And I think played a major role in fueling this conflict we're in right now in Ukraine. So this was a very, very, very big deal. But compare it, the reaction now when we get this report, which shows that the whole thing was baseless to begin with. And the same people who told us that Trump was a traitor and that this was the biggest deal in the world are now pretending it didn't happen. So, yes, there's a huge double standard across the board, both in the amount of attention and also in who gets held accountable for false statements to Congress. In the case of Michael Sussman and Sean Henry, nothing. And by the way, I should say that I wrote Michael Sussman, who's the Clinton attorney, and also CrowdStrike, the company they hired, and Sean Henry, their president, about their false statements to Congress. And I gave them 48 hours to respond, and no one got back to me. And that, to me, is a pretty glaring act of silence, because in previous stories I've done, when I've contacted CrowdStrike, they've responded to me pretty quickly. Here, when confronted over, you know, potentially making a false statement to Congress, I got nothing back.
And why is the issue of this DNC hack so essential? Why should people care about it?
This is the allegation that started it all. Before Trump and Russia were ever accused of being in a conspiracy, and we know now that that was a fiction by Christopher Steele, another Clinton campaign contractor called CrowdStrike made that allegation first, actually 7 years ago this month, in June 2016. So CrowdStrike, when they announced that the DNC had been hacked, and that they believed Russia was the culprit, that set off everything. 1 month later, WikiLeaks released the Democratic Party emails that they said they received from a non-state actor, so basically meaning not Russia. But immediately the Clinton campaign, based on what CrowdStrike had said, said no, this came from Russia. And that started this whole thing. And the FBI, rather than doing its own investigation of the DNC servers that had been hacked, they relied on a Clinton campaign contractor, CrowdStrike, which is just as scandalous as them relying on Christopher Steele for leads and surveillance warrants. And we all know about that now. It's very well documented. There's been multiple reports now by the DOJ, including Durham and the Inspector General Horowitz, that show the FBI relied on the Steele dossier for surveillance warrants. Everyone knows how improper that was. It does not get any attention that the same FBI also relied on a different Clinton campaign contractor for the other foundational allegation of Russian hacking. And that, to me, is a scandal.
You know, the time that Donald Trump stood up and said, Russia, if you have the emails, release them. He said this, of course, in front of a speech and on national television with everybody there. I always found it laughable that if he was colluding with them, he would need to announce it in such a big way. Russia, if you're listening and you have the emails, release them. But this idea that then Russia then listened to what he said, turned around and released the emails of Hillary Clinton and John Podesta and everybody else, that was a media narrative for years. I mean, it still basically is. It hasn't really changed.
It was. And so that's exactly what the media has done, is they take public statements like that from Trump, where basically he was saying it in jest at a news conference. Exactly as you say, if he was actually colluding, why would he be announcing this in public?
Right.
That makes no sense. Instead of focusing on the actual facts, such as those that I've laid out in this article, where, again, this allegation starts with a Clinton campaign contractor, CrowdStrike, and the FBI never did its own direct examination of the DNC servers. The media instead focuses on things like that Trump said, which makes no sense. Which, by the way, Trump said that after the Democratic Party emails were stolen. The media also ignores this fact that Sean Henry, who I mentioned, made that false statement to Congress, the president of CrowdStrike. In December 2017, he was questioned by Congress, and they asked him, so do you know when the Russians took the data off the DNC server? And he said, well, actually, we don't have concrete evidence that the Russians hacked anything. He said that under oath in December 2017. We, the public, didn't learn about that until nearly 3 years later, May 2020, because the intelligence community and Adam Schiff sat on that testimony throughout the entirety of Mueller's probe. And so in May 2020, 1 year after Mueller shut down, then we finally learned through the release of this transcript that the president of CrowdStrike, the firm that first made the Russian hacking claim and that the FBI relied on, had admitted under oath that they lacked concrete evidence. That's a direct quote, concrete evidence. So that's just another aspect of the scandal that the media has refused to cover, because instead of being interested in the facts, they've instead tried to cover up for this Clinton campaign scam. And as we all know, it's been hugely consequential, but with no accountability.
Aaron Maté, Real Clear Investigations. Thanks for joining us. We'll post a link to your article as well. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, big 4 o'clock hour for you coming up. I got another great guest who's going to join us on the show a little bit after 4 o'clock. The big tech censorship machine is actually now running in 2024. I'll explain what all that means to you. And plus, are UFOs real? A whistleblower says, you bet. And also, they are in fact aliens. And AM radio, will it be saved by at least two House Republicans? I'll give you the details on all of that as well as the show goes on today. But listen, if you are ready for a thrilling, heart-pounding adventure, I'm talking about the kind of fun you will never forget, go-kart speeds of up to 55 miles an hour on a professional karting track, then you need to go to New Jersey Motorsports Park. With the nice weather here, spring and summer, it is the perfect night out. Family, friends, bachelor party, corporate events, team building, a night out with your buddies. A full-service restaurant is right there to make it a great time. The Finish Line Pub. Plus, there's axe throwing. There's a pool. There's so much fun at New Jersey Motorsports Park. So book your experience now at njmp.com. New Jersey Motorsports Park. Look at the calendar. There's always great events going on there, concerts and so many other things as well. You will love driving these go-karts. They are so much fun. And believe me, this is not child's play here. This is not like the low-energy electric go-karts you're used to at amusement parks. This is the real deal. Gas-powered engines, outdoor professional karting tracks. New Jersey Motorsports Park, njmp.com.
Rich Zeoli, weekday afternoons 3 to 7, Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and on the free Odyssey app.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.